This has been my experience at Kofa since my appointment in 2003. I should say that your invitation to this meeting was received with a great deal of trepidation, naturally, because the reputation of this committee precedes it.
There was absolutely no need for trepidation. you will attest after this engagement that actually probably one of the most pleasant encounters you've had in a long time.
That's particularly heartwarming, Chairperson. I have, in preparation for what was to come, invited a team from social development to accompany. On my immediate right is Mr. Kotweko Pagale, who is the Chief Financial Officer of the Department. On my left is Mr. Julius Sefole, who is the Chief Information Officer of the Department. And somewhere in the gallery, I have two other officials, or three other officials. The Chief Operations Officer, Mr. Zane Dango. We also have a chief director in my office, responsible for...
Maybe if you could allow them to introduce themselves, so that we can link name to face.
Okay, thank you very much. Perhaps I should allow them to do so. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Lucinda Mpenge, Chief Director, Cluster Coordination in the Office of the DG.
Simon from the Budget Office.
Okay, thank you. National Treasury, may we know who are here today?
Good morning, I'm James from Peter, National Treasury from the Social Services Section.
Mushumi Ramji from National Treasury, Office of the Accountant General.
Good morning, Monet Gere, National Treasury, Social Services Chief Director.
Good morning, Judy Nider, National Treasury, Social Services.
Thank you very much. Also, General, we know who is in your team today, except Kuputeng, we will know her very well.
Thank you, Chairman. Myself, Karen Sambembe, the Auditor General, and next to me is Jerry Wheeler, who is the business executive responsible for this department and its associated entity. And then behind me is the senior manager, who is responsible for, are you behind me? Who is responsible for this department, Avery Orlando, and then the manager who has done most of the groundwork on this assignment, Jacob Boda.
May we have members introducing themselves, starting right at the extreme right.
Karen Dudley, member of the National Assembly and with the African Christian Democratic Party. Thank you.
I'm Ramoche, Member of Parliament, representing Social Development.
Shivas Josephine, the Chairperson of Social Development.
Tolem Shutulu, Member of Parliament, NA.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Ivy. I'm a member of Social Development Committee. I'm a member of Parliament. Just the name is Ludo Arison.
I'm Eddie Chen. I'm a member of SCOPA and I'm also a member of the group which deals with social services and governance within SCOPA.
I'm Basi Chilefude, member of SCOPA.
Trevor Bonham, member of SCOPA.
Lorraine Machian, member of SCOPA.
What is Ronald Mugden, member of SCOPA.
Pierre John Kavler, member of SCOPA.
Thank you. I'm Comrade Temba Gunji. I chair this committee. Right. Having the sense of the formalities, I'll hand over to Comrade Vincent Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to you. Good morning to our guests.
Is your mic on?
Yes.
Sorry.
Thanks. Audible now. GG, Counting Office Survey. We want to characterize this hearing by saying that you run a 56 billion rand operation. And in your own words, if you went to your stress test of 2005 to 2010, your major priority was to ensure integrity of the system, especially around the social grants and payments. We also want to indicate to you, sir, that your department has a direct and immediate impact on assisting the fight to eradicate poverty. Direct impact, and it affects the most vulnerable of our society. My mother in the rural area, and I'm sure your aunt and your mom in the rural area, success depends on your department's ability to carry out its function. And also, we believe that it's almost impossible for you to achieve your objectives without reliable systems. And that's why I'm going to focus on the systems in that department, and my colleagues will deal with the rest. So, in that context, I want to refer you immediately to page 170 of the annual report, and just go through a few of the issues on that. Now, page 170. The Auditor General did an audit, and there were glaring weaknesses picked up. And I would imagine basic weaknesses, and I'll elaborate why I thought there were basic weaknesses that he picked up. And that information was relayed to you in November of that same year, 2005. You indicated that you're going to correct those issues. The audit was done definitely after March 2006, 5 months later, and the Auditor General still picked up what I believe are fundamental errors and basic errors that you learn when you start your IT training. So could you explain to me why is it that in your department somebody can write a program and also access it in the production system? In other words, I can write a program, get to the other side, change it and possibly even put my own bank account number in the system. I mean, those are basic controls when we talk about segregation of students. Why is it that your department is unable to pick that up? And what have you done so far? I mean, really, it's a finding. Why is it like that, and what is the situation today? Can I write a program and go change it later on without difficulty?
Thank you, Chairperson. I was wondering whether I will need to respond to questions as they are arranged, or perhaps we'll take a list of questions.
Oh, okay. No. We'll just respond to a question as it comes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I acknowledge the question that's been posed, especially as it relates to the Auditor General's report and the fact that the audits have been carried out in the way that the Honourable Member has described, and the witnesses identified in the way that they have. Most of the system weaknesses that have been identified have since been addressed. Most of them were addressed perhaps after the audit was completed, largely owing to the fact that with the task that the department had with, in connection with the establishment of the South African Social Security Agency, we have had to split our human resources on IT, part of it being to focus on the internal systems of the department, and the other one being to then assist the Social Security Agency in the establishment of those systems. In fact, I can confidently say that most of those systems have since been developed, and of course that some of them may not be as yet be perfect, but over a period of time we can expect a great deal of improvement on those. With regard to the specific technical aspects of the question, if you'll permit, Chairperson, I'm going to ask that the Chief Information Officer of the Department assist me in that regard.
Thank you, Chair and the House. Maybe before I answer the specific question, if I may indicate, and maybe in support of the statement that has been made by the DG, that most of the issues that were raised by the Auditor General have already been picked up. You did ask a question as to why 5 months later, when they did an audit again, the matter still came up. As Christmas mentioned, however, that by that time, the controls and policies and procedures that are required to address the issues that you raised and that are in the Auditor General's report had already been implemented, because we could not wait even for the DG to receive the report immediately after the findings were made. We had already put in place an action plan to resolve those problems. Unfortunately, at the time the Auditor General returned, those procedure manuals, policies that we put together had not yet been signed off by the accounting officer or the relevant officials within the department. And it was on that basis, therefore, that even though the matters had been addressed, the Auditor General left his report, as it is, or indicated it is still work in progress. And I think that's what we agreed at the time when we were sitting down with the auditor. With regard to the specific question on the weakness in terms of programmers being able to program and then able to log in and work in a production or live environment, this is one of the areas that was identified within the control and segregation of duty, which we had addressed at the time. I must indicate, obviously, that at the time the audit was done, there hasn't been an incident reported of a programmer having probably illicitly used his or that capability or that weakness to create fraud or any proper action. But it's an omission that we could not allow to continue forever, and we since put in place the controlling procedure to be able to do that.
Okay, nothing point to make.
All right. Thank you very much. I indicated earlier on that for me, I must go to the matrix. I mean, another problem picked up by the Auditor General, and let me from the offset say that your argument of
capacity constraint is not going to hold in this committee on this particular question. What is the general picture of that documentation, support document for audit purposes, were not archived, filed, couldn't be traced for him to conduct his business? A couple of departments have come to us and said to us, well, we've got capacity problems. You don't need a B degree to have a filing system so that the AG can pick up a sub of the statement. Why is it that we have this thing in the department where systems are crucial? As I indicated earlier on, it was your own best plan that said you want integrity. And this is one of the basic requirements for integrity. A system of filing that the Auditor General can verify. Why do you find that in your department? And how have we rectified that subsequently?
Thank you, Chairperson. The capacity will not always refer to people's qualifications or perhaps even warm bodies. It might just refer to physical space as it relates to the question that's been specifically posed now. It related largely to the fact that we did not have the physical space to store some of the information that the Honourable Member is referring to. But we have since taken steps, and I will ask the CFO to elaborate on those, but we have already instituted systems that would allow us to create batches and to trace them and to know exactly where they are, so that when the Auditor General office need information for purposes of the audit, that we're able to pull out that information and place it before the auditors. But the CFO, I'm sure, will be able to expand on that.
Yes, maybe it would be a good task. I mean, it would appear that these matters that were picked up by the AG, you to a large extent have been able to address them. So they were basically not impossible issues to resolve. Was it that in terms of your own management processes, you were not able to pick these things as deficiencies until they've been picked up by the AG? I mean, fine, we're happy issues identified have been resolved, but does it always need to take the AG to do an audit for you to see shortcomings in your system?
It shouldn't always mean that, but sometimes it does happen that way, that you don't become aware of a weakness until you discover it. But that shouldn't be the case, because we need to be always vigilant in the department to make sure that the controls are there in the department. In fact, to obviate the Auditor General Office picking them up and raising them as issues, we need to be proactive in that regard, and we are definitely taking steps in that direction. If I may ask them, the CFO, with your permission, Chairman.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I just want to put context to the question. I think during the period under review, we have basically had three challenges that led to this problem. And I want to say that the Auditor General found this weakness for the first time since I have been in the department over the last 5 years. And the basic problem was on the experiences that we had on high staff turnover, which is one problem. And at the time of the audit, there was only one person within the internal control section who was a newly appointed person. The systems, Chairperson, and procedures are there, but were not adhered to, which is essentially the weakness.
I'll give an example. For instance, we have our internal audit unit that goes and do an audit before the external auditors come in. In most instances, there was no proper record keeping of documents that were sent in and out or to the internal auditors. And when the external auditors came on board, some of the vouchers were in fact either between the internal audit office or within the internal control section, but not yet filed. But I think it was basically the non-adherence to procedures because of, unfortunately, the staff capacity and the inexperience or the new people that were appointed. And this is the matter that we have now addressed. All the votes have been filled in that section. The other issue which the DG has appealed to is the issue of space. Because we've run out of space, we have approached the National Archives, but they could not assist us. We have to look for alternatives. In the meantime, we have stored all the old records in one office so as to clear the second strong room, and we've moved all the records that are 2 years old to the old strong room. So we basically have now created more space and all the files are filed in a chronological sequence for this current financial year, and we are hoping that this matter is not going to recur.
Let's stick on that. Right. If I'm understanding you correctly, what you're saying is all your documents are filed in one store, and therefore the Auditor General will be. Let's look at the disaster recovery or the risk on that. Forget about the system. Those documents that you're saying are filed in one store. Are you not perturbed that God forbid, if that storeroom burned down, we have a problem in terms of recovering that. I'm asking that because the AG picks up that you don't, or certainly didn't at that time, have a disaster recovery system. Maybe the soft side of it as opposed to the hard document. How far are you in addressing that matter? Do we have a disaster recovery system, or are we going to get up one day and say everything has been destroyed, we don't know where we are? This is what the Auditor General is saying to me as a layman. You didn't have a disaster recovery system at the time of the war. My question to you is, do we now have a disaster recovery system, and has the Auditor General had an opportunity to satisfy himself at its end? And secondly, on the matter of if all your documents are in one file, in one room, as we indicated, is there no danger that that could itself be a problem?
Yes, Chairperson, I'll be brief. Members. Yes, with respect to the hard copies, I think there is a big challenge across various departments because we do not have electronic copies of some of the hard copy documents that we have. But with regard to the soft copies in terms of the disaster recovery plan, I think the main finding was on software. That has been addressed by CISA, and they have tested the off-site for such disaster recovery. Within the department also, we also have backup systems on a daily basis that are done, and the tapes are actually stored off-site. So we'll be able to recover a lot of lost information in the case of a disaster. I'm not sure, Chairperson, whether that satisfies the question. That's fine.
Let's move on to your management information system. Your plan, when I was reading it last night, had a target date of implementation end of financial year last year. And that we were going to be live from the 1st of April 2006 with everything. But going through the books, I read somewhere that you had an underspend because that system had only reached the stage of conceptualization and basic implementation. And you said it was because of unforeseen delays caused by CISA. Memory serves me correctly for my reading last night. why was that delayed, and why is it unforeseen? If we had planned for it in 2005, you come to Parliament and you ask Parliament to give you money, you can do X. I'm finding it difficult to see the unforeseeable side of it a year later. Why is it at the end of the year? Sir, what kept you missed your car to take for the death rate? Your third plan is to be up and running. It wasn't up and running. Why is it? And what caused the delay?
If I may, through your chair, respond. It is correct that yes, we had planned to roll out the MIS system, and this MIS system was primarily in support of the social security functions. And we started the process starting in 2005, as I alluded to, honourable member. The process, however, of planning and preparing the rollout of the MIS solution was not an easy task to have the solution up and running as in the time as was targeted. It was assumed at the time that because the system had already been rolled out in Eastern Cape and Free State, the efforts to roll it out to the other remaining provinces would be less. Unfortunately, as we did the groundwork of planning and environmental assessment, it became obvious that with the different processes that are in place in the different provinces, we cannot superimpose the solutions in Eastern Cape and Free State as they are. And the bulk of the time was therefore spent planning to have a standardized rollout of the solution in the remaining provinces. And that led, unfortunately, to late expenditure in the project, and the money could not be spent in that time.
Thank you. You see, my difficulty with that, and maybe I'm glad the department is here, I mean the portfolio committee is here. You come to Parliament, you, first of all, you don't strategize. You come to Parliament, you ask for money to support your strategy. 2 years down the line, you come back to us and you say, you know what, we found out when we received the money that it was not feasible. Now, you're either not strategizing properly, or you're giving us a document that's not worth the information in it, because I would assume that is what informs Parliament to approve the budget. So you're strategizing, asking for money, a year later you come back and you say, actually, when we got onto the ground, we realized that theory and practice are not the same thing. The impact of that, sir, is that this 37 million rand, I think it is, that we rolled over, or 40 million that we rolled over, whatever the figure might be, could be better spent fighting poverty. That is my difficulty. It could be better spent fighting poverty at the most vulnerable sectors of our community. So we can't come to Parliament, ask for money, not spend the money, especially on infrastructure, and expect me as a member of Parliament to sit back and say, I accept, I understand, but unforeseeable. I'm just raising that so that in future it's not going to be acceptable to us. Not in the social development cluster where, as I indicated, your performance affects my mother in the rural area. 37 million goes a long way, and for us it's not acceptable that we can have this type of situation. So I'm raising that matter so that when you walk away from here, you have a context in which we are being so difficult in these matters. I finally said, I think I've got half an hour, let me ask one more question. And maybe the Auditor General or Treasury can also assist me on this one. If you go to page 214, of the eight, of the annual report. The financial statement note 12. We have 2 billion rand advance payments to other entities. Again, it's still around the social pension exercise. Could somebody explain to me the rationale and the reason for having 2 billion rand prepaid? Are you with me on note 12? We've got prepayments and advances advances paid to other entities, social pension advances, 1.8 billion rand. Could somebody explain to me what is that 1.8 billion rand that you paid to other entities?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, this matter, we inherited basically from the provinces. There are two processes that are followed by provinces in terms of the service agreement that they have signed with the payment contractor. Some provinces will require an advance payment to give to the service contractor before the service contractor can pay the beneficiaries. In some provinces like Western Cape, they pay upfront, the contractors, and then they claim that money from the province, from the department. Now, the advances are usually towards the end of the financial year, which is in March. We have beneficiaries that are paid from the 1st of April in terms of the payday. Now, we need to give the payment contractor at least two or three days before the payday, the money so that it can be able to be distributed to various pay points for payment, because this will have to be paid in cash. So in that instance, we have to get an advance payment from the National Treasury. In fact, National Treasury allows provinces, which is in this case now, SASFA, to have an overdraft so as to begin to have that advance, which will be the first deduction in the new allocation in the next financial year. We are planning to address this, but it's going to need a lot of communication and planning so that beneficiaries on the ground will probably have to be notified when we change the payday, maybe from the 1st of April to perhaps 3 or 4 days in the new financial year. But at this stage, we felt having to establish SASFA and change a lot of things. We don't want to disrupt the current payment processes. Rather, let's deal with this matter when SASFA is fully up and operational, instead of trying to do this at the same time and confusing beneficiaries as we switch over from provinces to SASFA. But it's something we have noted that we, in the future, we would like to address.
Yeah, you need to tell us how long in the future, so that next year when we sit down here, at least we can have an answer to that one. Just a question for clarity, from an interest point of view. What percentage of our services are electronic, in other words, my money is deposited directly into my bank account, and what percentage do I have to go stand in the queue on a cold winter's night because I must pick up cash? Just a rough idea. I'm asking that question because you know and I know that there's no year that goes by that somebody didn't unfortunately get ill or pass away standing in a queue waiting for his cash. And I would assume that in this century we should move more and more rapidly towards making life easier for the beneficiary. So just an indication. Are you thinking in that direction, or is it not on your radar right now?
Chairperson, it would be a thumbs up to give numbers at this stage, but because of this, the cabinet has requested that we do a beneficiary profiling recently, and clearly majority of the poor people are still in the rural areas, and most of them do not have banking accounts. So we have the bulk of our payments still made through the cash contractors. However, we've got in the last 2 years taken in a lot of people on ACB payments, which is through the bank accounts as well as the post office. We can perhaps at some later stage give the specific numbers, but I would be reluctant to guess. Yes, I was looking at my colleague today, she was shaking her head as well. So, but I would say there have been successes in terms of the campaign that we had to get people into banking accounts away from cash payment. But there's still challenges because of the rural nature and circumstances. the license from the beneficiaries to move to Kenya. Every digit and also just
If you don't have to just leave it at that. If you can be able at some point after this year, send us in writing that information. I think that would be fine. Yeah, I think that would be fine. Let's leave it at that. And that's cool.
Thank you, Chair. Is this okay? Thank you, Chair. I hope this is audible. Chair, I'm going to deal with the governance issues. The section responsible for executing the requirements of non-profit organization act does not have sufficient capacity to maintain accurate database of organizations registered with the department. According to the report, for an example, you had 8,398 organizations registered, and that was your target, 8,398. Now, organizations that reported, that is, that submitted reported to you, were 5,415. Now, you said I deregistered 1,024 organizations. You sent non-compliance notices to 1,304 organizations. Now this brings your output to 7,743 organizations. Now, would you explain to us what happened now? Not accounted for. 655 organizations are accounted for. And could you tell this committee what happened to the other organizations? Because this type of database, lack of keeping proper database, might be a recipe for corruption and other things that are not permissible in the Act.
As far as I'm aware, we do have a proper database. Am I audible? I seem to hear myself. We do have a database of organizations registered with us as non-profit organizations. What we are wrestling with is the capacity of the relevant units to fully comply with the requirements of this legislation. Not so much with the registration of the organization, because that we are able to do. Of course, the numbers that we have to register per month are quite high. The limited capacity that we have within that unit is overstressing. But the database is not our biggest problem. I think our biggest problem is with doing other things that the legislation requires us to do. To monitor, to follow up, to capacitate the organization that we register.
Or another thing, the database you have specified is there.
Yes, all I'm saying is there are certain organizations that are not accounted for. And this starts from even from 2004, 2005 report. If I could take some extract from the previous report, the department, that is 2004-2005. That one that I was talking about is for 2005-2006 report. Now the 2004-2005 report has this to say, the department experienced a backlog with regard to the registration of non-profit organizations. It addressed this issue in the short term through the allocation of a dedicated team of staff members. However, the annual report notes that the NGO directorate is severely under-resourced, and that it has become virtually impossible for the department to implement the legislation governing this sector. No, what I'm saying is, you are saying, I don't deny that you have got the database, but the section responsible for the maintenance of this database and the record keeping of it is a state that is our project. And this starts from 2004-2005. And it does appear, even in 2005-2006, this problem has not been resolved. Now all we want to know is, what is it that the department is doing to employ measures that would curb this type of situation?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the question is clear now, but I hope I've grasped it. Chairperson, what we have done in the department is we have instituted a review process of the NGO Act and its administration in the department. The purpose of that exercise was to try and put us in a better position to understand what the capacity requirements will be for us to fully comply with the legislation, including to be able to register all organizations that require registration within a reasonable period of time. We have completed that exercise. We are...
Well, are you saying that you no longer have a backlog in terms of registration of the organization?
But what I'm saying is we have completed the exercise of reviewing what the shortcomings are. And one of the things we are doing is we have created 14 new positions in that directorate to be able to deal with issues of registration to minimize backlog.
So in short, backlogs are still part of more challenges in the department?
Indeed.
Maybe one that we have that the woman in consciousness can continue. Oh, no, that's fine. I think Rupulin.
I thought he was still explaining.
Yes, no. Rupulin. I think he has explained very, very clearly. Fact of the matter is, they have created 40 new posts. Try and enhance capacity for them to deal with the challenges of backlog, which are still there. Unless there's some further information that you want to give you over to
you. You see, Chairperson, we are worried. Feeling of course that's not just really solving the problem. You see, the department says, well, we have been exposed. Now let's have the cousin say those people do not have the skills and capacity. Now have they only been exposed or they have measures incapacitating these people? And what measures are those? Because we always come here, you know, and ask the same question. Skills and capacity. But now if you say you have employed 40 people, is that not solve the problem?
Thank you, Chairperson. Every post that is created in the public service, upon it being advertised, I think there are competencies that are required as a prerequisite for appointment. So there would be a requirement for a certain level of competence before a person can be employed to that position. So we do not expect
that to do with the theoretical part. That theoretical part is correct. But it is not necessarily always the case. Let's limit it to your department. We have had instances in our hearings where institutions are accused of employing people who do not have the necessary qualifications, which creates those problems of capacity. That's why sensitive to you may have the numbers but not have the skills. So let's not venture in that direction. In your own case, I think what he wants to know is whether are we assured that the people who are employed will be sufficiently skilled so that we don't come around and say, yes, we have the people, but these people still need to undergo further training to be, you know, to be refined and rituals and all that kind of stuff. Down to that question, Chairperson, is yes.
Thank you, Chair. I read my question and the answer is yes. The next report will indicate whether that yes was genuine. Chairperson, I want to go further with another question. Earlier on, the CFO, the department was saying, I could not grasp what the whole thing was. They said they inherited something from provinces, and I'm going to deal with the interaction of provinces and the national and the province. I couldn't grasp it well when you said we inherited it from provinces. I thought it is the province that inherit from the senior, not the junior, inheriting from. In any case, interaction between national and provincial departments is not always adequate to ensure frequent monitoring of expenses by provinces. In other words, I'm saying you allocate money to provinces as national, but more often monitoring of how that money is being spent or what happens in provinces does not seem to be the baby of national that much. I say does not seem because in terms of the, when you look at 2004-2005 report, we have similar problems with regard to money sent to the provinces. For instance, in 2004-2005 auditor's report, Free State had spent only 2.1% of the allocation. Eastern Cape spent only 7.1% of its budget, and Western Cape just approximately 20%. The Auditor General said that no, that was 2004-2005. That nearly 32 million of poverty relief funding transferred to the Independent Development Trust had been unspent as a result of insufficient project management controls at the level of poverty relief projects. Finally, the Auditor General points to the fact that the department lacks the capacity to manage its relationship with non-profit organizations. You see that point coming again from 2004-2005. There is no clear quality of progress for these civil society organizations with their efforts at registering in terms of non-profit organization act. That is number 71 of 1977. Now, when you come to 2004-2005 report, It must be noted as a matter of concern that a number of provinces have not spent their allocation in terms of the integrated social development services grant satisfactorily. The Free State, for an example, spent only 9.4 million of the more than 37 million that was allocated. Then the factor said that similarly, KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo, two of the poorest provinces, spend only 48% and 44% of their grants respectively. For all three provinces, underspending was reported because by problems with the registration of non-governmental organizations and community-based organizations, by delays in the process of awarding tenders of delaying province completing business plans. So you can see that from 2004-2005, 2005-2006 report, there is a recurrence of this deficiency in governance. Now, what is the department? Probably last year you could have said things are on the pipeline. One man was saying, a dear new Landari paper, they say, and if they must say anything in the pipeline, a dear new figure, who landed the papers. Now, we don't know how long your pipeline is, you know, in addressing these issues. Could you indicate to this committee?
Thanks, Jefferson. I'm going to be very brief. Over the period that the Honourable Member refers to, the department had conditional grants that went to provinces for special services to prevent. I'm happy to say that we no longer have conditional grants going to provinces. Because those allocations now form part of the equitable share of provinces. But as a material time, the difficulty has always been a political one rather than an administrative one. That perhaps in the national consciousness, there's an expectation that the national department is senior and that the provincial department accounts to it. But constitutionally, legally, it doesn't work that way. The result is that we rely largely on what I would call cajoling. We can only persuade provinces, we can only urge them to do certain things. And of course, through the mechanisms of meetings and the question support from them, we can only implement those. But we actually do not have absolute authority over provinces to do certain things. And in that regard, we rely largely on provincial legislators who also appropriate these conditional grants to make sure that provincial departments are actually able to spend them. And that is a constraint, I'm sure, that cuts across all national departments that have concurrent functions with provincial departments. And I'm sure this committee would have heard that before, and it's not new.
Chairperson, I would at all costs resist to engage the DG with political arguments, but mine would just be administrative. My common sense says you give the money to the provinces and you monitor whether anybody is junior or senior. I think that should be the argument now. But I contend national must monitor the monies that have been given for provinces, whatever money. And I contend there have got to be reports of those money back to national. Now, that is why I say I wouldn't be engaged in political issues, just administrative issues. Thank you.
All right. Before we move to Honorable Trent, he spoke about FAFA coming into play. I would imagine that the peace establishment does have challenges in terms of governance arrangements and the also popping out. I just want to find out how are the governance arrangements made, and or to what extent are we able to confirm that indeed the risks associated with the transition to SAFA are being taken care of. And just to confirm that the accounting for the money that go to SAFA, how will it be done? Like, we're getting into the financial year now, end March. How will the accounting be done? Will it be the result of the new arrangements, and how do these new arrangements impact on risk management?
Thank you, Jefferson. I will make just an introductory reply to that, and I hope that the CFO will be able to embellish it. The governance arrangements, especially with regards to the finances, is that from the 1st of April 2006, the 57 billion rands for social assistance, which are transferred that go directly to households, that money forms part of the budget of the National Fund. It doesn't continue to suffer as a transfer in the same way as you do, say, for example, with the National Development Agency. Which means then that the National Department remains accountable for what we call the big money. There is a transfer of the administrative components that goes to SAFA, for which the Chief Executive Officer of SAFA remains accountable. That is the arrangement we have currently, and it appears that it is an arrangement that the National Treasury favors, even for the financial year coming, commencing April 1st this year. Hopefully, in the fullness of time, the Treasury will be satisfied that SAFA perhaps has the requisite capacity to be able to, independent of the department, administer the big money. Whether that day will come anytime soon is something we are not very certain about. But I'm going to ask the CFO perhaps to expand if the questions will be come.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. In addition to what the DG has just said, the Department has drafted a partnership agreement, which may call it agency agreement, which stipulates all the necessary protocols with regard to the relationship between the Department and the agency, because the Department remains with the responsibility to monitor and oversee the implementation of the activities in the strategic plan of the agency. With regard to the financial monitoring, we have developed monitoring tools which require the agency to provide monthly reports to the Department. We also have quarterly reports as required by the PSMA on a quarterly basis that must be submitted by the agency. Currently, with the big money, we have still an interim arrangement where the provinces are assisting the regional offices of SAFA with the administration and payment of the big money. Although it creates a little bit of dual accountability between the CEO and the DG, but it is a situation we believe is unavoidable in the interim. We are busy engaging with the National Treasury on the final stage, what would be the final decision in terms of the flow of funds post 1st of April 2007. Chairperson, basically, I would say those are the key issues. So in the monitoring tools, we have specific key indicators that we would like the agency to report on with regard to the funds that we transfer for integrity improvement, that is the, now the integrity of the system administration of social grounds, as well as progress with finalizing the establishment of the NDC itself, because we do have specific funding that we give to the agency for establishment as well as integrity improvement.
Okay, no further, put it there. So, for the big money, 7 billion, it will be supplied by the provinces who will be running the show and reporting to the department.
Well, check that this is an interim arrangement.
Yeah, no. Whatever, whether permanent or interim, I'm saying, as of now, that is the arrangement.
Yes, check that, okay.
Now, for the small money, talk of the big money, I suppose it's small money. How is the small money administered?
Chairperson, the small money, which is for administration, is actually the one that we transfer to the agency for operational costs, funding operational costs, as well as establishment costs, lastly the system integrity improvement. We monitor that through, as I indicated, the monthly financial reports that they have to give us, as well as the quarterly performance reports with regard to the progress that is made by the agency. There have been considerable problems, but we are having a regular interface meeting checked by both the DG and the CEO at a relative level where the issues are being dealt with regard to the process going forward.
And the small money you were talking about, 4 billion, right?
Yes, Jefferson. It's actually a little bit big, but we call it small money in the next 10.
Yeah. All right. I think that's really the start. But I'll hear you very loud and clear that you have some teething problems. Which I'm not sure. Okay, they will be teasing until when? because we, from regular questioning, it was clear that the area of interaction, especially in terms of monitoring, that had to do with the provinces, was not that very strong. So one gets worried about your monitoring of the agency. This is very question of report. Mm-hmm. That's really coming in. To what extent will they be submitted timely, and to what extent will this report be the basis for the actions from your part? Because the DG already said there's no big problem, so what are the implications if you get reports that indicate that indeed they're challenging? But maybe let me not go into that and allow Honorable Trent to come in so that we don't. But before you, Honorable Trent, just one question from common sense and then to be used so that we don't get this.
Just on this agency. Just to follow up on the chair. The year under review ending March 2006, there was understanding because you were transferring people from the department to the agency, I would assume because of the skills that they developed. Also understanding because the rollout of the IT system from CISA hadn't happened. We now on the eve of 2007. Have all those problems been resolved? My dear Chair, we can't go into 2007 and find that we don't have systems to do the key tasks or key performance areas of SASA. Mm-hmm. Neither do we have this. But a year ago, you said the difficulty was so easy. We see you
1 year after the event. So I'm trying to bring him there. Is that ready to roll on the 1st of April in terms of the system, in terms of the people? If not, maybe we must then decide whether you should go ahead with pursuing the investing money that you're talking about. You say, yes, I'll do that. I just want to clarify on, are we ready to roll with the day system? In all aspects, both money and systems. Both people and systems are very important.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wouldn't be so confident as to say coming from first that I will be ready with all systems. Because the establishment process is still unfolding. SASA is not fully capacitated, fully functional. There is a functioning head office which doesn't have all the capacity, not all the systems. But that is what we are setting up. And perhaps it may be important on another occasion to come back to the committee with the chief executive of SASA. To share with the committee some of the plans we have, so that if there are any anxieties on the part of the committee, we can deal with those more directly.
Yes, I suppose that the portfolio committee, which is here represented by the chairman and other members, can, in your usual interaction, take up that matter in greater detail. Of course, we were always skeptical when it comes to processes and institutions in relation to public funds. We're talking big money, 57 billion that will go into extraction, whose ability to properly administer that money, even if there was a teaching, cannot guarantee the whole process. We obviously become apprehensive and can only hope that as the rollout begins, you will be vigilant to that challenge. That it definitely must deliver effectively and efficiently. But so let me allow Honorable Trent to come on board.
Thank you, Chief. Chair, a lot of the issues that I'm going to raise have been sort of touched on, because the section that I am going to be dealing with is a broad section which cuts across everything, and that is really human resources and capacity, and we know that this is a problem in a lot of departments. Where you're getting your systems right now in place, that the capacity to actually be human, and I think you've been admitting all morning that there are problems in that regard. Chief, just a general comment. I'm not going to deal really with programs 4 and 5 because that's, sorry, 2 and 3, because that's got to do with the social drop. But suffice it to say that you have an establishment there, so I understand. You have 128 people in that establishment for those 2 programs, which is to monitor the social grant that you've previously talking about. Now, the first question is, are all of those funds funded? Are they funded, sir?
If the Honourable Member referring to the establishment of the last financial year?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Indeed. No, not all of them were funded. Which is why we've learned the hard way going forward, that we, in the course of last year, we embarked on a process of restructuring the department. And in the structure of the department and the post-structure that we have become more realistic with regard to how much resources do we have and how many posts can we buy with that. So in the past, what we've done is simply say, what is the ideal structure? And you claim the number of posts you believe you need. But you don't always have the resources then to fund the filling of those posts. So that has now changed. We are now being guided by the resources available, and we create our post structure guided by it.
I think let's not have an impression that all those posts were unfunded posts, and by the structuring, therefore have eliminated the vacancies.
Yes, I just want that question at the beginning, because you see, then if you say that, then what we need to understand are 36 vacancies. Then we don't really know what you're talking about, which if it's unfunded, you can't appoint a person. Right, the vacancy, but in effect, you can't appoint a person. So, I think, you know, we've got to be more realistic about that. Now, the next general question I want to ask is, your department is now called the Department of Social Development, not social welfare, and we welcome that, because clearly that is the lead we have to go. So your main function then as a department is to coordinate all these programs that deal with social development, and that is the welfare services, transformation, children, families, youth development, implementation support, etc. And you've got, well, by your own admission, specifically in the non-profit organization, 39, almost 40,000 of these organizations registered, is that correct? And you're registering at the rate of about 1,000 per month. Now, I mean, this is enormous. Now, I know you're not giving them a lot of money, but you are responsible to monitor those organizations on behalf of government. And I've got the fact in front of me, which says that, you know, within the limits of law, you must determine, coordinate, and implement all the policies and measures designed and designated to you, and support and enhance the capacity of non-profit organizations. Then it goes on, you've got to have prepared models for them, you've got to prescribe benefits and allowances applicable to them, you've got to consult with the other ministers, because clearly there are other ministries that also have non-profit organizations, which fall under the Act. And then you have to get reports from them. Counting records must be given to duty to provide reports. Now, you had 11 people in that career in that program. Now you've appointed another 14. So that's 25. Now, my question is, how are you going to be sure that 25 people are going to be able to meet the comply with this Act when you're sitting with 40,000 organizations? And perhaps you can tell us how many of those organizations actually comply with this Act in your cross credential that you're reporting on here.
Thanks, Jefferson. I'm unable to give the numbers now, but that is information we can make available to the committee in writing. But let me start off by saying that the creation of the 14 posts is simply seen as a measure that would ameliorate the situation. We are nowhere near full compliance with the NPO Act. The review process that I referred to earlier on, Jefferson will recall, reveals that the capacity is quite are so significant that in fact consideration may have to be made to actually take out the NPO directorate out of the department, maybe create an agency that deals with NPOs. Because the machinery you require is much bigger than what the department is able to house in itself. So what we are doing at the present time is to improve the situation as it currently stands. We want to improve on the
I think. All right. No, I was saying that
the capacity is simply not there to implement what is in the Act. That's the simple answer, and I'm quite happy with that answer, but my next answer goes a little bit beyond that. The General also sees that there are compliance issues involved, and that is inadequate or lack of policy systems. Now, regulations, and that's also a problem, because the Act is there, but have all these regulations and policies been put in place in order to implement this Act? Because one thing, you don't have enough people, but you don't even have those policies and regulations in place, but that's also a problem. But the Auditor General found that you didn't have, maybe not all of them, but there was an inadequacy in that respect. Has there been any improvement there?
So I didn't get the last part of the question.
Compliance issues, he says, an inadequate or lack of policy in respect of the government of this Act, non-profit organization. Has that been addressed, that problem? Because this Act was passed in 1997, a long time ago.
Yeah, no, you see, the initial report to your question by the TG was actually saying he doesn't think they'll be able to comply with the Act. And I wanted to check, then what?
Yes, Chief, but you see, I'm going in a particular direction. And I'm just using this as an example. So that way, what my next question goes around is the emphasis of your department now, excluding, remember what I said, excluding programs 2 and 3, which is monitoring the specific rates. You only have something like about 500 people in the entire department. Very small number of people. And yet, your vacancy, even at this stage, are almost 25%. Now, if you have a small component of people who's supposed to be monitoring a host of activities, all designed to encourage others to help people develop themselves, and therefore to reduce the burden on the state of having to pay out welfare costs, then surely having a full complement of people is absolutely fundamentally non-negotiable. Because how can you run your department if you don't have it? Now that brings me back to the last question on this issue. You've said that you're hopelessly understaffed in respect of the program that deals with the non-profit organization. Now what about the other programs? Are there not major problems there with capacity in numbers? And if so, what are you going to do about it?
Well, in general, if government departments were allowed to have the numbers they want and were given the resources, we wouldn't be discussing this. I think the biggest constraint is resources. That we always have to, with the minimum resources we have, do the best we can. And our post-establishment in the department has got to be informed by how much financial resources are available for personnel. And that is all we are able to buy with the allocation we get at this point in time. But of course, we don't have the numbers we want all around. But we have the numbers we believe we can work with, and as our allocations increase year on year, we then create new posts and we prioritize their filling, and that's how we go about it. Just like the CFO would like to embellish this one.
No. That's limited, I think it's fine.
Children, there are one or two of your programs that are particularly badly hit by vacancies, and that is development, implementation support, which I would imagine is quite an important part of your function, where you have 31% vacancies, and then your HIV/AIDS, you have 37% vacancies. And we've spoken about the Social Security grant system. And then your administration, 31% vacancies. Now surely that is becoming critical. What plans do you have in place to actually improve that? Now I'm talking vacancies, not additional stock, just vacancies. And that's why I want you at the beginning, are these funded sites or not? And I think that it tells us it's not like that. I'm working on the fingers of the post. Now, to me, you've got 31% vacancy in your administration. It's also all the critics you've got to get together. And then you've got major problems. And I don't even right now to say you do, and I just do the best with what you've got. You've got close to the right end of my fingers, why are you not pulling that cabinet for some question?
Well, we are in fact feeling this cost, Chairperson. We unfortunately in this financial year starting April, we have received an additional allocation from the Treasury. And we certainly will be feeling most of those costs this year. All the applied time costs we believe will be able to fill the cost of the financial year.
So, Chair, can we then assume that when we get the 2007 audit report, that this problem will have been largely solved? I'm talking about whether you don't believe you've got enough funds. That's one issue. But I'm talking about funds that have been funded that you haven't got. Will that problem be solved by the end of March of this year?
Well, certainly not much.
If you're talking about 2008,
that's more realistic.
Yeah, Chair, I'm going to go over to the staff and service
sector level,
and then I just want to make comments on two particular areas. You have scholars and skilled level chief to find that and permanent people. Okay. You have in fact, appointed in 2005 75 people when you only had 57 votes. So you actually appointed too many people. Okay. And then in this current year, you reduced the number of votes to 49, but you also have now reduced the number of people that are filling those votes to 38. So what has happened to the rest of those people? In one year you have at that level, you have plus 31% or an additional number of people, almost 20. And the next year again you're under in the same process, the same category you went now to 2 people. How does that work?
Chairperson, I suspect that relates to people who were employed in the course of 2005, 2006. Perhaps even slightly beyond that, who were appointed additional to the Department of Social Development. Those would be people who were awaiting proper appointment by SAFA, effective 1st of April 2006, which means that those people were in fact employed in advance to assist SAFRA with the establishment, but SAFRA was not in a position to employ people in its own right until the 1st of April 2006. So those people were employed additional to the establishment of the department, but doing work relating to the establishment of SAFRA. So come April 1st, 2006, these people then transferred to SAFRA, and then that creates vacancies back in the department.
Right, so we can follow that line to tell the effective thought that it had on your status, but I want to do that right now. I want to conclude with this section. Senior management level, I just worried you, because we find in the Auditor General's report over and over again that there's problems with management. And we've had it last week and the week before. I don't want to mention the department, but certainly it does. We find it all the time. Senior management level 13 to 16, permanent people. You've actually gone just a little bigger, but you're still at 23% vacancy. Now, can you not fill that place? Well, what is the problem? Why is it that you can't fill that place? Is it the salaries that are not good enough, or is it just that there aren't those people around you? If so, what are you going to do about it?
Well, sometimes it's a combination of those factors, but the other factor, which is something perhaps we sometimes don't highlight very much, is the fact that in the department the recruitment process in the public service time the post is at the plant until the time that it's filled. On average, it takes 3 months. It sounds absurd, but in fact, that is a reality. It's because of the stringent regulations that are attendant to the recruitment and selection process in the public service. Now, in the space of 12 months, if you have to fill the kind of posts, the number of posts that you have, it is often the case that there isn't enough time for HR to be able to process the applications, to be able to receive applications and set up panels within the limited time that we have. It's a third reality that we have in the public service. But certainly it's something that we are putting systems in place to improve on, to cut down on the length of advertisements from 21 days to about 14. Those are some of the measures we are introducing. And from time to time, we have to obtain permission from the Department of Public Service and Administration for us to shorten some of those things, just to allow us to recruit faster than we normally can.
I'm very weak that we have the National Prosecuting Authority in Los Angeles, and they have similar problems. And they have their people needing to become magistrates and things like that. However, they have acknowledged the problem in the city, and they're actually doing something about it. They've got a professional team of people coming to have a look at their whole staff establishment. What do they really require? Looking at the salary scale, etc., etc. And my question is simply, is it not time for you to do something like that? It's just this agency also assisting them to try and solve the problem, planning the problem. Because I also noticed that your report that you have a turnout percentage of 23%. Is that acceptable? 23% turnout of staff? I mean, in such a small organization, in terms of staff, part of the staff?
Certainly the turnover is very high, that is admitted. But I figure you would find that it is endemic across the public service, because what actually happens is we post from each other. That's what happens in the public service. We post from each other and we share the spoils elsewhere.
But it seems they're pushing more on you than you're pushing.
Well, largely because we would like to believe Chapters, and we build the capacities of our people so well that they become very attractive to other departments.
And that was all the department three.
That was going to be my next question.
What are you doing?
The other issues I had have been really dealt with by other people specifically, so we're not going to go back to that. But I think just a comment, you know, we're not interrogating you, we're actually trying to embarrass you. We're trying to find out what the problems are, so we can bear to assist you. What assist you, but make certain recommendations. So I welcome your honesty in that evidence. We don't want to hear things like, we are busy putting in systems to do this. We want to know, what is it that you're doing? Send it out to us. And maybe you'd like to help us to help you. So maybe you should give us a little bit more information about what you're actually doing. You have to do it now, but you can communicate with us by email or whatever you want. Chair, thank you for that. I'm sorry, I went a little bit wide, but there was a little bit of overlapping with our question.
Thank you, Honourable Trent. Indeed, I think we're very unfortunate to kill a dead horse, because people have really thrown around all the time. We want to thank you, DG, and your team, and, for the time that spent with us and the responses that we've got. I think they're going to help us to engage with you annual reports from a much more informed perspective. But before you leave, as always, to Danigam Thomas to do our personal comment. Make sure this is something that I can also which you may want to read to Danigam Thomas to Mamas of a Farmer. based on this muscle for 12 years.
In that case, I'm similar to I think we sort of like first online also to listen to our department to account to the Auditor General, which I believe that now that we listen to them, we are still going to bombard questions to them. And then I believe it's an eye-opener that whenever you move around, there is somebody looking at you, listening at you. We have our Auditor General who's sort of like a watchdog somehow to the report from the department, which helps us as members of parliament to be more vigilant and do a lot of oversight in order for the department at least to account to us, so that when we are being asked by the people outside, we have ready answers. And at the same time, not just to defend the department, but to let the department stand on its laurels. Like when I was listening to the department, we were also thinking, why is this happening? We kept requesting, whispering among ourselves. So it's an eye opener, really. We feel honored that at least we heard from the host mouth that I don't think they are going to change their statement when they will be briefing us. Supposed to listen to them, but we're going to not to throw stones, but to check what they told was true or not. We are happy to be with you today. Thank you.
In our next interaction with your report, we'll find that all the matters that we've discussed have been sorted out. Some of your colleagues were coming before us. We have transcripts of what they said in the previous hearing, so we'll be checking. She said to us this is going to be sorted out, but the report says the opposite. So whatever you're saying here, it's not just for his own sake, but I just sit for 2 hours of dealing out. So these things are recorded. We thank you very much for your presence.
Thank you, Mr.
Mayor. All right. Thank you. Let's break for tea for 10 minutes before we entertain the National Development Agency. 10 minutes.
Annual report for the National Development Agency.
We've come here with Bishop Madusi, who is the chairperson of the board of the National Development Agency. We also have two other officials who will be assisting me in answering the questions. On the left, I have our new COO, Ms. Laurie Less, and Mr. Mohana, who is responsible for all the projects on the ground. Mr. Malusi is not necessarily going to be answering the in terms of the accountability, but the circumstances under which we are discussing the annual report of the agency, I think would benefit through his presence for any questions that go beyond 2004. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. We warmly welcome you, and we understand the circumstances that necessitated the coming of Bishop Malusi as the chairperson of the board. I must admit, Bishop, I've never failed to recognize your face in the newspaper, but seeing you in person, everyone pummel on me. But no, welcome.
Right. I will hand over to Comrade Mashiani.
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me start off by welcoming the team from the NDA. My first question, Chairperson, will be around something that worries me a bit. The present COO of NDA was with weather services in the last financial year and was suspended. And I just want to find out whether the case has been concluded and was the NDA happy with the result.
Yes,
the previous COO of the NDA was indeed put under suspension together with the previous CEO. The case for the COO went on for about more than 18 months. He was under... Just a minute.
Chairperson, I'm speaking about the present COO of NDA.
Who was
with the weather services and is now with NDA.
Okay, I didn't actually get the last part of the question. I will not be able to answer the question around the suspension of the COO now and the suspension at the weather services. I would appreciate maybe if that question could be answered by the weather services. What I can answer to is in relation to her employment to the NDA. So I would not be in a position to talk about the content or the substance of what happened at the weather services. She has been employed in our organization from the beginning of this year. Her employment was very much transparent process using our own recruitment processes. We have checked everything relating to all the things that we check when we employ employees. For example, we check the references.
Yep. Oh, yeah. No. Let's keep it at that.
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is, if I got you well, you have employed someone who has been suspended from the weather service. Is that the case?
Chairperson, the substance of the case at the weather services, as we understand it, was won by the person but I would not necessarily go into the details.
Okay, let's not go into those matters. They are not NDA stuff. Yes, Chairperson,
I didn't want us to go into the details of the whole thing. I just wanted to find out whether they were happy, but we can leave it at that. Going forward, Chairperson, I think that the key objective of the NDA is poverty alleviation. Am I correct? And the areas of concern there, as per the report, which are capacity of people-related issues which I will not be dealing with, system-related matters, governance arrangements. But also, in addition to that, there's a special investigation report which came through. So my patients will be dealing with those issues, matters from the report, audit report, and also matters from the special report. I want us to be clear on that. Right. On page 82, chapter 10 of the annual report, I was a bit perplexed by the cash and equivalents at the year end of 2005, which were 256 million, and 2006-261. Now I want to understand what are the cash reserves meant for.
I wouldn't call this cash reserve in that sense, in the sense that maybe the number is referring to. What happens with the revenue that we get is that you put it in an account because you're going to be paying the liabilities in the form of projects as you commit to them. So what you have here is the whole money, the whole cash that you have, that also accumulates in terms of interest and other income generated. But we're not actually generating income by saving anything. So the money that we have here is not necessarily the reserve as it would apply to a private entity.
I'm not really satisfied, Chairperson, with the answer, because to me, and that is why I firstly started by stating the objectives of the NDA and saying its key objective is poverty alleviation. And maybe as a lay person, that is why I don't understand what you're talking about, because I expect the NDA to be disbursing amount of money for projects in order to assist us in poverty alleviation as government. But let's leave it at that. And let me move forward to the next question. From the audit report, it is clear that the financial controls in the NDA are inadequate. What are the reasons for the state of affairs in the NDA, and what is being done to solve the problems surrounding financial controls? Reference can be made to the fact that 8.6 million was misappropriated by an account flag, as well as the fact that there was no proper audit claim to substantiate projects and creditors that had to be written back to income. Now, explain to me.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think maybe for me to be able to answer the question, I need to break it up if I understand the question correctly. The question relates to the misappropriation of 8.7 million. The other part of the question is about the extra expenditure. How are we spending money in relation to the project? I think the third part of the question relates to controls that led to the fraud taking place. I'll try to give you those questions as I've attempted to analyze them. The first one is with regard to the environment that led to the fraud taking place. It has been explained in the report itself. That brings me to the historical existence of the NDA. It has been troubled for quite a long time. The NDA is a young organization. It's a young institution. When you look at the maturity of institutions to deliver on their mandate, it's about 5 years old. In the 5 year period that it has been in existence, there have been two critical episodes that shaped how it performed and the things that happened to the organization. The first one is you've had the earlier organization that was established as a transitional organization, leading to the actual establishment of an NDA as an entity. That brings institutional instability, and also it brings in systemic problems. So the inheritance from a transitional organization to a proper organization brings with it systemic difficulties. You've got to budget for that in terms of building the organization.
Is that supposed to be a justification for lack of proper controls and monitoring?
No. It doesn't
lead to that. But what it has in this particular case, the fraud took place from 2004. It explains why it took so long before it got detected. The thing is, you had a leadership vacuum at that time. There was no CEO. The CEO was under suspension. The COO was under suspension. So the systemic problems that exist at the time can be explained by lack of leadership at the time.
But why was the CEO, is the head of the institution? How do you get a CEO suspended for a long period of time without a clear finalization of his or her case? Surely it means that those who were within the leadership of that institution who took those decisions definitely failed the organization. So if you suspend the CEO over a long period of time, then you create that kind of instability. But that does not exonerate those who were in the organization from not doing their work. Clearly there was somebody who was going to work every day and was getting paid every month to do or to fill in for the CEO. So for me, that does not become an explanation that is acceptable in its own merit.
Yes, with your permission.
Yes, before you, Bishop.
In addition to that, I think in any institution, if there's a vacuum in the position of a CEO, the board or whoever is responsible appoints an acting. So to me, I don't take the explanation that is given, that there was a vacuum, because I don't think that there was completely nobody in the institution to do the work and to monitor what is taking place. But let them answer what you have been asking.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, I chair the board of the NDA. Before we were appointed, the minister and his oversight responsibility came to the conclusion that there was something untoward in the administration of the NDA.
and occasions the suspension of the chief executive officer. By the way, the chief executive officer of the NTA is by law appointed by the minister in consultation with the board. And at this time, it was actually at a time when the board of the previous board of the NTA had its term had come to an end. And so the minister then had the suspension, the cautionary suspension, so that there can be an investigation of both the chief executive officer and chief operating officer. At that time, we came onto the board. And in order to keep some systems going, the minister appointed an envoy from the Department of Social Development to the NTA. And that envoy was made up of two persons who were then in the position of chief executive officer and chief operating officer. In all fairness, it could not possibly be expected that these people would be as present as people that actually work at the NTA, because they actually work in Pretoria at the department, but they had an extended assignment to keep an eye, and no one knew how long this was going to be. It was supposed to be just a few months transition, an investigation would happen, and whatever disciplinary processes would be in place. Our board came in during the time when this investigation was in progress. When it was finished, it was up to us to then institute disciplinary processes. Again, while you have these people suspended and with the disciplinary processes still ongoing, you cannot appoint another CEO unless the one who is being disciplined.
Yes, no, Bishop, I think on that.
Yeah.
I think you have cleared the greener. The Department of Social Development, through the minister, I'm going to teach you what role did you play. Appointed an envoy consisting of two people. Those are the people who were in charge, who were running the institution at that time, by remote control from Pretoria. And so things went haywire during that period. Whatever length of time it took to investigate and prosecute, that's another matter. But the fact of the matter is, two people were appointed to run the institution in the absence of those suspended people. And it was their responsibility. And I dare say they were expected to run the institution as efficiently and effectively as it's supposed to be run. I don't think that they were given a half mandate. They were given a full mandate to run the institution. Now, from the question that she has asked, it appears that indeed it was not as effective as it should have been. I would imagine that the board and everybody else expected that the institution would be run effectively, but it did not. And I don't want us to cycle around those historical factors and matters. You have contextualized the situation. It took time to investigate. There were people supported from the department who were running the institution. I think the only area of variance is that I expect that those people should have done their job to the fullest. Whether it was a strategically correct decision for them to run the NDA from Pretoria or not, that's another question. But from whichever angle and whichever place, they were expected to run that institution effectively and prevent the loss of that huge amount of money.
The reason why I would say that just you can say institutionally they're supposed to be able to do that. They were not effective. But I think that it's part of the historical reality that there was not only the matter of the envoy, but in fact the organization itself needed really a full-time chief executive officer. Remembering that even the one that was suspended was succeeding a previously suspended CEO. So there has been a whole history of systems failure at the NTA, which only now, with the appointment of the current CEO over a year ago, that we were able to really begin to pull things together and create the environment that has enabled us to detect the things that we're detecting today.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Just come on.
Chairperson, I think let's leave the history part of it and what happened. And concentrate on what has been done to recover that amount of money. It's a progress, or something being done. Secondly, the matter of internal control. Has it been sorted out what is happening?
What has been done since this issue was uncovered? We have instituted criminal proceedings against the individual. We detected what is critical is the detection of the fraud. We managed to detect because of the systems that we have now implemented in the organization. I can say that the health of the NDA is beginning to shape up. That is the reason why we detected the fraud. We have now, in terms of the criminal proceedings, the person is now sentenced. He is serving 15 years in prison. We have implemented new systems that will enable us in future to detect this well in advance. We've integrated two systems.
Yes, but I think CEO, the second part of your question was, what measures have you taken to recover that money? Five, whatever the fraudster has been arrested, charged, and sentenced. But what measures have been taken to recover the lost money?
They have attacked all the assets belonging to the individual who has been imprisoned. They have also instituted a case because in order for them, those assets to be converted into cash, you know, we need a court ruling. That court ruling is going to be made on the 12th of February so that that can now be brought back to the organization. So we are going to be able to recover whatever that is recoverable, not 100% 8 million.
12th of February, that's next week, Monday?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Chairperson, the November 2006 investigation, with reference to the AG's report, RP262 from 2006, paragraph 7.2, speaks about the misrepresentation of academic qualifications. And this is related to the same case that we're talking about. And my interest is whether the NDA has been able to make sure that they don't have any future recurrence of such transgressions. Because from the review of the accounts personnel file, the alleged misrepresentation of the academic qualifications has been brought to the NDA's attention in 2001. Now, let me be talking about his case again. I don't want us to concentrate on that. I want us to concentrate on measures put in place now to make sure that this type of thing does not happen again within your HR.
We have now, Chairperson, is that everybody that gets employed at the NDA, we go through two processes. One is to check all the qualifications, the credit history, the references. We also check their competencies. They go through a competency assessment test.
All right, let us hope you know the lens. Like some abandoned business, like abandoned pattern, they just fail on the most basic of things, and it's very bad. Is there any way to just come along?
Okay. As management of projects is one of the main functions of the NDA in eradicating poverty, it is of great concern to note that in the report of the AG that the control environment in the project directory. Project directory appears to be there. Does the MDA have the necessary capacity to manage its project and what is being done to improve the situation?
We have admitted that we have difficulties with regard to competencies, the skill level of employees who are in project. That is why in our strategy we articulated that very clearly and spelled out a plan of how we're going to be addressing this in the next few years. We've got timetable for what we are going to be doing in terms of the recruitment of competent people, people with skills, and also in terms of what are we doing with the current people who are working at the NDA. So we've got a plan that we are currently implementing to improve the skill level of people who are working in projects.
What is that plan? Can you go into some bit of details about that plan?
Yes, we can make it available, Chairperson, in terms of a document, but just to specify what it entails. The first issue is about when you are in project, in the first instance, you must have planning skills. Right now, as I'm speaking to you, people are undergoing practical training by way of them planning what they are going to be doing to improve the situation in projects.
But the issues that were raised are so basic, like disparity or disparity between money that has been given and activities that are happening on the ground. That for me has very little to do with skills. Money being given and the NDA being unable to produce contracts for those projects. For me, that has nothing to do with skills. People failing to monitor the project for which money is being dispersed. And I think maybe the coordinator, Mr. Mukhan, should be able to come in here, because I mean he's employed as a man who is in charge of project coordination, which should actually form the backbone of your activities. I mean, if you fail at that level, what other thing are you going to succeed in that will make the NDA relevant? We'll be able to hear from him, I mean, to explain the situation. Why are we having this thing? What is it that is being done to alleviate that situation? Yeah, no, I want the director of my project to respond as well, because, I mean, to project. Oh, okay, I'll make a number.
Chairperson, in terms of the annual report 0506, page 74, audit report paragraph 4.2, page 74, audit report paragraph 4.2, the amount there, contracts for two projects amounting to 3.6 could not be submitted by the NDA. Contracts for one project amounting to 799,000 were not signed by both parties to the contract. The NDA does not have an adequate filing project management system to ensure safety of project documentation. Amounts written back from two committed projects did not agree with the approved amount for this project. I can go on and on and on. Now, when that question is answered, maybe these issues as well should be spoken to, so that we get a better understanding of how the NDA will be able to assist us as a country. Poverty and innovation. Because if you have these go into, and they are not totally taken care of, written down, and documentation is there. That tells me that the story of documentation, the fire which took place, to me it becomes a bit skeptical. So let me understand the whole thing.
Summarize the issues on page 74.
Yes, no, I found it actually. It seems here who missed the Quran opinion. Then if Kwanama Ama issues the Sila, which you need to come in as his boss, then you need to. But what to take it from the generalities to the specifics?
Thank you, Chairperson. I really appreciate the questions that have been raised. On page 74, as the Honourable Committee Member pointed out, under 4.2, there are a set of issues that have led to the qualification, and those revolve around controls over poverty eradication projects. I think it is important, Chairperson, to point out that almost all those issues relate to document management and not the execution of projects themselves. I think that's the starting point. So, what have we done with regard to that state of affairs? The general principle, Chairperson, is that we have obviously admitted that we've had a challenge with document management, and at the time of the audit being conducted, the issue is we could not submit the relevant documentation to the AG before the cutoff line. So what we subsequently did was to request our internal audit to deal with all that section under 4.2 to verify whether indeed the documentation existed. Let me just briefly explain why the documentation could not be submitted on time. There were three processes happening at the same time that required the file. The first one was the normal audit of the Auditor General. The second one was the forensic investigation on the misappropriation of the 8.7. The third one was our ongoing internal audit on this particular file. We are talking about the same set of files. And therefore, at the point of the conclusion of this particular audit, those files were not provided to the Auditor General. What we have since done is that we asked our internal audit to verify the existence of this documentation, which they have, and they attest to the fact that the documentation exists.
So what I'm saying is that the documents, as read by Komit Mashian, actually exist.
Yes.
They are there.
Yes.
So,
I just want to add one thing, Chairperson. What?
And may you also just go a little further on this document management. What is the actual problem with document management, and what is it that you have done or are doing to address that challenge of document management?
Thank you, Chairperson, for the question. I wanted to make a note that the only matter that internal audit could not establish related to the existence of such projects amounting to 7 million that could not be verified, which is the fourth bullet point from the bottom under 4.2. What has happened since is that we have asked independent firm of auditors and other service providers to go and verify the existence of these files, because as provinces, we knew they existed, at the national office, we knew they existed. But we asked internal firm of auditors and accountants to verify, and they have reports that verify that those projects exist. On the issue of document
management. But let me just check on that one. Don't you have the capacity to do that? I mean, you know, we call the external auditors. What is it they are coming for free? You will be paying those people. And you are the head of that directorate. You obviously have people working under you who are supposed to be managing and monitoring. They are not doing that, they haven't done that. And you have to get the external people to come and do it at an expense. in addition to the monthly payments that the people are supposed to be doing that as part of their normal job again. I mean, why if they find that everything is in place? But are we going to manage by consultants?
Thanks for the question once again, Chairperson. We are dealing with an audit matter. Management has a response, and the response of the management is that this project exists because our development managers on the ground can testify that they exist. Now, the issue is we need an objectively verifiable source that will confirm that this project indeed exists. And that's the motivation behind the procurement of an external provider. On the issue of document management, Chairperson, what has since happened is that, of course, we have totally redesigned our whole filing system. We have again paid attention to the fact that maybe what we require is not only a physical document. We have procured the services of a service provider that will scan all the documentation. In other words, you'll have the documentation both physically and electronically available. And finally, we are switching the systems of project management that will also assist us in terms of monitoring.
Chairperson, I am going to propose to the committee that when we plan for the year, we pay a visit to NGA. Please note that as part of our program. I want to understand why there was a problem of submitting the documentation before or at the time where it was supposed to be. Also, in addition to that, I'm going to go into the special conditions in project context.
Let's do this comment. The first part of your question, I think he responded to it. He said there were three parallel processes at that time. The AG's auditing, the forensic, Tony, using the requiring the same file. So that is why when they were wanted by the AG, they could not at that point be found. But it has been established that those files are there. So I wanted to have to leave that part. So you can
move forward.
Part. Yeah, sure.
This is reference to annual report page 0506, page 75. What is report paragraph 6? And this is around the special conditions in project contracts. During the audit of project, it was found that certain of the special conditions had to be met before funding could continue were not evident on file. And this issue is still regarded as a control weakness, as management does not ensure that special conditions are met before funding is approved. And this, I'm making the statement in reference to two projects, the Hessel Farmers Support and the Makwakiwe Community Based Local Economy.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of special conditions should be looked at as part of the improvements around project management. Let me just indulge the committee and just give them a 30-second appreciation of what a special condition would look like for project approval. You will have a special condition that will say for a project that is going to conduct farming activities, there must be permission to occupy. Or you will have a condition that will say the board must go through a governance training program. Now, if you don't have a timeline attached to the special condition, that is open-ended. So in this particular project that has been looked at, it did not say before the first tranche, before the second tranche, before the third tranche. But we admit that this is a problem on our side because we need to attach time frames or tranches to those special conditions. We have sensitized the board or the committee that approves projects around this particular thing to tighten the time frames for conditions. And if you look at all the projects that have been approved since, that is the case. They are linked to definite tranches. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it is a problem that should not have been there in the first place. I mean, simple logic. But honorable sense.
Chair, now I was almost covered by the honorable member's question, but I just wondered in terms of the employee by occupation category. We have 132 people working for the NPA. Is that an adequate structure to actually comply with what you are doing, to comply with all the legal regulations, etc.? So if you say you have 18 senior managers, 15 professionals, 47 technicians, that doesn't really tell us whether that is an adequate number of people with the correct skills to be able to monitor all these projects correctly and as they should be monitored. And are all of those posts filled?
Thank you, Jefferson. At that time, because the annual report is historical information, at that time we had that number. That has changed since then, because we've gone through a rationalization process. Now the staff establishment is about 98. Then the sufficiency, the question would be, is it sufficient to have 98 people to monitor the projects that we have in? The logic behind rationalization of the NDA and restructuring of the NDA at the time was twofold. One was that in the first instance, the way in which the organization was structured at the time did not actually take into account the strategic function of the organization. It does not necessarily deliver the project on the ground. So we were doing that in order to begin to reskill, to say that if the organization's mandate is to deliver through other agencies, what type of institutional mechanism do you require? So that process of restructuring the NDA is currently continuing. And for me, we've just finalized a competency assessment to say that what type of skills and competencies does the NDA need in order to carry out its mandate. We have that. It is in place. Now it is to match that by looking at the current people that we have in the provinces and also in terms of head office. That restructuring is continuing. My timetable is that within the next year, the NDA really needs to be completely reshaped. And in terms of the staffing, in terms of how it does its own business, and it is all in the strategy that we are in. I think it requires a bit of time to do that in terms of the systems, the competencies, to answer the question, how best do you do business in terms of poverty alleviation than the way we've been doing it before? So it is not only a question of numbers.
Yeah, and unfortunately time is what we do not have. So I hear you, within a year's time the NDA will be completely revamped. We'll be watching. Yeah, no, he said that within a year's time, by the end of this year, if I heard you well, the NDA will be completely, will have a complete makeover.
Can we just get clarity on the end of the year? Right. Because the current year, financial year ends on the 30th of March. And that's like in 2 months' time. Or are you talking about 2008? Because
I'm talking about
about the calendar year. In the sense, we've got a concrete plan, Chairperson, which we can actually give out to the committee members to have a feel of exactly what is going on here. Okay. And like what time.
All right. Okay. No, that's fine. He's talking the calendar year, so it's not the end of March this year. Nor will it be end of March next year. So by the time we have our Christmas, everything will be sorted out. Comrade Bonomi?
Thank you, Comrade Chair. The CEO, we talk about history, and I would not like to see history repeat itself because of the mayhem that occurred at that time. But there were certain key management positions that were waiting for extended periods during the financial year under discussion as well as the previous year. What is the current situation? And what do you regard as the main reason for the post being vacant?
As part of the restructuring process, there were vacancies that were not filled. At the moment, I can say that about more than 75% of those vacancies that were vacant have now been filled. We hope to be having a 95% rate of filling this post, especially at project management, those delivery vacancies to be filled within the next 3 months, I think, in terms of our timetable that we have in. Almost every, we're working with, because of the capacity that we have in internally, we have actually contracted a company that is helping us with filling up all the vacancies as we are speaking now.
Just one additional question I'd like to ask. And the reason for asking it is that I want to understand. I need to understand the failures. Now, the question I'd like to ask you is, what effect do these vacancies have on the controlling environment within the NDA? I need to understand exactly your assessment of what effect it had. Now, you just answered the first question well enough. The answer, I need to know.
That I can give on the effect of a vacancy on the control environment is on the IT management. We have a vacancy which is going to be, we are going to have the interview next week. But there was an interview that happened for the IT manager. I'm seeing out the IT manager because of the difficulties that the organization has experienced with regard to control. They were IT-based, electronic-based. The impact has been that for a long time, the organization could not deal with the security environment relating to the IT. It could not deal with the strategy for archiving, having records on archives that can be used. We're having difficulties at the moment because we've extended the forensic, by the way, to 2001. We bet in now to say that how do we recover the information to that time. So it has a very big impact on the control environment. But we are currently dealing with that. We have now even put, for the future, we have put a system in place by which we're going to be dealing with critical posts. How do we fill critical posts with an agency that does not compromise our legal environment in terms of labor relations, but at the same time, you speed up as you can do in the private sector, having the controls in place. So we are currently dealing with that problem in terms of the policy, in terms of the regulation that we are going to be having internally, which we are already
putting in place. Okay.
Just a minute, complete. Honorable Raspal.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, one person listens and starts to think of what is happening in various organizations and various departments such as misappropriation, mismanagement, and it is not a good norm that has been set in various organizations. Chairperson, we all listening to our presenters here that there are some measures being set aside, put in place in respect of monitoring what is going on. My concern is, Chairperson, are there any immediate protection measures put in place? And who is actually responsible in monitoring the measures that are put in place honestly and sincerely? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. The measures that we have put in place, which is quite serious, we take this very seriously at the moment, we're focusing on corporate governance. We've now established internal audit units, a very aggressive, very strong internal audit that we have at the moment. We have now employed a risk manager who is actually going out detecting every risk that we have with the investment that we are putting for poverty alleviation. So those are the two critical measures that we put in place. And these are quite independent, accountable to the board, to check on what is happening on the ground. So I can safely say that if you put money on the NDA, it is going to do better than what you see in the media about the poverty alleviation
process. Okay. Comrade Bonomi, do you have some questions?
No comments. Yeah, I think that was the final question. Rather, there will be a repetition of questions that have already been answered.
I'll give the last question to Honorable Chair.
Chair, it's something that we come across from time to time, and some of the entities have actually been discontinued on the basis of not being regarded as going concern. I just note that your own audit committee makes that a statement as follows. The audit committee acknowledges that the agency's going concern status is dependent on the continued support of the Department of Social Development. Would you like to comment on that? Because that appears to me that it's a case of who plays the pipe or calls the tune. If you are an agency supposedly independent under a board, then surely you must have a degree of independence. And that doesn't sound to me like too much independence.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate the question from the Honourable Member. I would like to take it as the Board Chair. In fact, the question of the relationship between the NDA and the Department of Social Development is the very reason why I would not wish to leave this room with the impression that the NDA would blame the Department of Social Development and its envoy, for example, for the problems in our organization. We take full responsibility for this circumstances in which our organization was at the time. And we recognize that there was a need for something to be done, whatever short term or long term. But the board, which was new, and has now been there for 3 years, has a responsibility not only to develop the oversight mechanism and to ensure that enough resources in terms of human capital are deployed accordingly, but also to broaden our resource base, to raise money from outside of government, but also to see to it that there is adequate relationship and partnership building between the various avenues of government, because the government's expenditure on poverty reduction is quite extensive. It's not just, you know, related to the social development department. Everything is happening in every other ministry, including the fact that there are IDPs for local government which are also related to poverty reduction. So what we're really saying is that our relationship with social development department is really in terms of accountability for purposes of the Act. But in terms of our strategic functioning, this is something that we have discussed within our board as well as in our communication with the Social Development Ministry, that it is a diversified approach that we're taking going forward. And I think that when the CEO said that in this coming calendar year, the NDA will have completed its reorganization, we actually hope that that will also include some work to be done on the NDA Act, which some things have been recognized that need to be addressed as well. I should like to take the opportunity to extend an invitation, having heard the honorable member saying that we should like to visit the NDA. Actually, in my capacity as board chair, I would like to extend an invitation. Because I think it is in that kind of exchange, on-site exchange of ideas and your direct observation of what is going on, what really we're trying to do, that you'll be able to gain your own confidence in the various systems that we have developed. I should like to close by saying that the organization was established as far back as it was. This is the first time that we believe we have an executive administration under the current regime that is forward-looking in this way, that we're able to put behind us a lot of the problems we've had in the past. And we have, through the internal audit and the risk management system that we've developed, begun to identify a whole lot more things, small and big, that need to be addressed, and we're doing that vigorously. Thank you.
We would want to bring this session with you to a close. We want to thank you for appearing before us and providing us with the responses that the members have got. And I hope that the DG for Social Development was listening very attentively. He does have a sense of the areas of challenge and was raised them so that in his oversight role over the NTA, he would also be able to assist so as to ensure that your mandate is fulfilled. I must say that a lot of things indeed have happened that do not create a positive image of the NTA, and you therefore have that mammoth responsibility of not only getting things right, but also ensuring that everybody out there believes that indeed things have changed and changed for the better. And we hope that none of you ladies and gentlemen sitting there will one day come to get a report that you have resigned because you are facing a disciplinary hearing. You will be able to sustain your work for the betterment of the organization, but most importantly so that it's able to carry its mandate in relation to the poverty challenges, the inequality challenges that are facing the overwhelming majority of our people. We thank you very much. Our next engagement deals with the Department of Labor and its entity. But with your indulgence, DG, and of course welcome you and Namaskar. We would want to break and resume at 1:30. We don't want to start and then after 15 minutes say let us break. I think it might affect the rhythm of Lenders for New Year. So we think because our lunch is set for 12:30. So we'll break now, we'll be lunching from then And then at exactly our first one, we should be starting with the Department of Labor itself. And in spite of, or despite our program as it has been arranged, after the department, it will be the Transport Education and Training Authority. That is the CETA that will follow. After which it will then be the MEP CETA, the Construction Education and Training Authority, and lastly the Information Systems, Electronics and Technologies CETA. That is how it's going to be when we come back from after lunch.